Support for KMUW's Into Music podcast comes from McClelland, reminding listeners that Frank Sinatra coined the word skibbity in Strangers in the Night, which you can listen to in their downtown Wichita showroom. More info on McClelland's innovative sound, lighting, and video technology can be found at maxsound.com.
Hi, I'm Jed Bodwin, and you're listening to Into Music from the KMUW studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network. My guest on this episode is Johnny Campolo of Pets, a project that brings him together with his brother Nick and their friend Chase Shegley. The band's first record, Spiral? Is out now. In this conversation, Campolo discusses the music that has influenced Pets to date, how his work as a visual artist has inspired him musically, and what, finally, is in a name. That's Johnny Campolo of Pets on Into Music, coming up now. I have to tell you, knowing that I was going to be talking to you this morning, I had to take a drive, and so I was listening to the record one last time, and it's kind of like an overcast day here in Wichita. Or it was this morning.
Oh, nice.
And it was just like the perfect soundtrack to that drive, just the weather and the calmness of the music and everything, you know?
Good. Yeah, that's good to hear. I think it is, any album is worth settling into in terms of like a mood. But weather, I gotta say, as an East Coaster, weather dictates a lot.
For sure.
Everyone on the East Coast is obsessed with what the weather is, what it's going to be, and what it was, you know? And I think the music really kind of is it's mood music, you know?
Yeah. So I was curious about that because there's like, if I use this word, I don't mean it in a negative sense, but there's this a sensibility that's almost kind of like a throwback to like 80s pop or something like that. Almost kind of like more of a toned down version of like the new romantics, like ABC or Spandau Ballet, yeah, things like that.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. No, that's great you hear that because I'm not sure, like in this contemporary landscape, how many people would pick up on, you know, for instance, like Talk is one of my biggest influences. Not so much their pop stuff, but the really out records that they made in the 80s, like Spirit of Eden or Laughing Stock, that are sort of, to me, they're like my perfect, that's like a perfect 10 to me, but they're headphone masterpieces, you know? And it's a very high bar for as a lead influence for the music, but that kind of music that is sort of hot and cold at the same time, and music that like really pulls in a listener, that's what I always strive for. And I think that's what that's the bar that Pets is setting for this record.
So this, like, tell me a little bit about when this started. This was kind of like conversations with you and your brother initially, or?
Yeah. We initially started getting together in my art studio. I'm a visual artist as well, and kind of started as open jams, you know? What's fun, the sort of genre blending of this record and the band in general is that it takes both analog, typical kind of standard songwriting, you know, just sitting there with an acoustic guitar writing a song, and puts it in an electronic environment. So initially starting as sort of a jam with electronic instruments was a way to originally find like some beats that we really loved, chord progressions and beats, and sort of find like the vibe of where the record was going. And we started in this capacity, like before we took it into like a formal studio setting. But I will say that a lot of the record was written in the studio as well, which is like huge blessing. That's like a dream for any musician, is to like realize the things in hi-fi.
So had the two of you played music much together? Like, I'm imagining maybe when you were kids, but then beyond that, had you done it very much?
Yeah, in various bands before. Nick and I have played in some bands in New York, like kind of central to New York. There's this band called Pill that has been broken up for quite a while, but we had three records and some seven inches on Mexican Summer, on Third Man Records, and a small label, a friend's label called Dull Tools. We kind of, from Pill, grafted this other band called PE, you know, and we were in that band together as well. But the third player in Pets, Chase Segley, who is, for the majority of the entire record, is like the soloist on the entire record. He's the one on the saxophone, the flute, the iwi, which is, speaking of 80s, the electronic wind instrument. He and I met in 2017 in more of like a fine art context, where we were performing at an art opening for a friend, just a friend's painting show that was opening. And we initially met just through playing that show, you know, got together, spoke for a few moments about what we were going to do. We did a version of Send in the Clowns, the Stephen Sondheim classic, definitely popularized by like Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin. So everybody knows the song, but it was a couple moments between us. And then we just went into it, started playing. So I'd like to say that our first conversation was a musical one.
So tell me about the you know, the writing process itself. So when I hear the music, and I understand that how something is written may not reflect the final thing, but the music is so like unhurried.
That's really nice. I like that.
Yeah. And so I'm wondering if that's kind of the mindset as you're writing, like, We're going to start with an F chord, and then let's find out where it goes.
Yeah, unhurried. I love that. The one thing that, you know, we don't really have rules in the songwriting process whatsoever. I think that's like kind of when you try to pin something down before it happens, you're not like letting it breathe, you know? I strongly believe in like when you're making art, doesn't matter what it is, the art is going to tell you what it is as you make it, you know. Everything else is like too cerebral or whatever, or too you know what I mean. But for these songs, they were both in between a sort of formal songwriting process where Nick or I would bring a song that we've been playing by ourselves for years, something that we wrote in an intimate way, and shared it with the group. Split between that process and a very open, unrushed, sort of labyrinth-like song-finding experience. And it's hard to describe, but like, for instance, songs like I'm Just I'm, the one with the bouncy bass, it's our most Arthur Russell like track, just with the vocal treatments and the bass, the way the bass is so bouncy and is basically singular in the instrumentation. There's nothing else going on. That one, and for instance, Holiday, which came together with just a piano riff, and then we threw it through analog, like modular synthesizer, trapped something in the modular, and then that became the backtrack. So there were points at which we knew there was something there. Maybe I had lyrics, maybe I just had the chords, like you said, maybe it was just two simple chords, because a lot of the ballad like structures are basically like vamping four chords for 5 minutes, you know, that's really it, like Send in the Clowns, you know. But a lot of times it's about finding the song inside of the idea. Almost like coming into the studio with an idea for the container. Music, I think a lot of music and a lot of songwriting is about making a container to fit an emotion, to fit an idea, to fit something you want to express. But with this music in particular, it was a lot of searching through something, combing through some beautiful chords, but then pulling out just this one piece, you know. I'd say the recording was very maximalist in that way. I'm going to reference Talk Talk again. I'll do it a million times, but Talk Talk was famous for flying in all their best friends recording 100 hours on tape and then picking out the best 15 seconds and just using that, you know? So you get all of these disparate yet very gelled and combined sounds that sometimes seemingly are coming from nowhere.
Yeah, it's reminiscent to me too of like Peter Gabriel's records, especially something like So, where, you know, it's like you I've heard interviews with some of the musicians and they're like, well, I'm on that track for like 8 measures and then somebody else is playing the bass and then I come back.
Yeah. And I think it's a trick, especially in like contemporary technology. It's a real trick if that's undetectable, or the process of making something is impossible to hear. I think that's a real trick and strange when you're doing things in analog and then digital and then back, pulling it back and forth, which is like, I think it's like best of both worlds, you know, especially now. I've made records entirely to tape and it is so hard. Oh my God. Doesn't afford mistakes. It doesn't afford this sort of like loose openness that I've been describing. You know, with digital music, there's no tape. You just roll the thing and you can play for an hour and then pick out the best cool 4 minutes. You know, it's a luxury, you know, that's a privilege in a studio setting, but that is how we found some of the best takes that make up the record.
Okay. So your medium is primarily glass, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And from what I know, glass is maybe one of the most difficult mediums to work in. Is that fair to say?
Definitely, yeah. It's a challenge. There's a big learning curve. Although I will say what I'm trying to do with the material is, you know, it has all of these preconceived notions of the material is that it's fragile. It's hard, it's brittle, it's delicate, it's architectural, it's streamlined, it's almost futuristic the way people think about the material. In my work, and what I'd hope a viewer would pick up on, is that I'm trying to push the opposite. I'm trying to make it appear malleable and soft, wet, and like weird. And I can do that in a number of ways, but mostly it's my process, which is like melting this stuff.
And I ask that because I wonder, so often with visual arts, kind of like what we're talking about is having that shell and then sometimes it's the subtractions or the minor additions, right? That ultimately shape it. So do you feel like your art making process is very much in tune with your music making process?
Absolutely. I would say, as someone who's been doing them both my entire life, it's really two halves of one brain. You know, I sometimes combine them. You know, I've done like the artwork, not for this Pets record, but for previous bands. I've done a lot of the artwork and used my own drawings or my own artwork in the design of the music. Like, for instance, I make all the flyers for Pets. Like the aesthetic is sort of my world and like the tables of my studio, you know, the details, like you said. But between the two worlds, it's really just about like finding your own path. I mean, the glass stuff is like extremely specific. I've never really been one that has like followed trends, really. Not to say that I'm going out there just to be singular, like be, you know, like this is so unique, but it ends up being a very gated material, sort of. Like you said, it's like pretty intimidating of a material. And once I became obsessed with it, I really, there's no going back. You know, I'm never going to work with anything else just because I've honed my skills this long. And I would say that concept applies totally to music and especially this band. There's trends, just like everything, you know, just like there's fashion trends, just like there's of course there's music trends, you know. I heard this term recently that I couldn't stop laughing at, and the term is y'alternative.
Yeah.
Have you heard this before?
Yes.
Okay, I just caught on to this. This sort of like new American cowboy in contemporary indie music, or like this sort of refresh on the Americana or like nostalgic country. You know, I have personal friends in the city that I know very well. They're not Southern, and they're making this music. You know, it's funny to me. But that said, that's just like a trend that's happening right now. Pets is not really subscribing to any of these trends. I think, like, kudos to you for picking out the references, like really on the nose. It's so far like playing out. Pets is reading as very unique. It's very singular in that it's a lot of different things at once. And just to speak to your question, I think a lot of art, it doesn't matter what you make. This is certainly true for the visual art that I make and the music that I make. It's about building bridges. What Pets does, I feel like, is like a huge bridge from that era of music, from that like clean, hi-fi, headphone masterpiece sort of high bar, a bridge from that world into the contemporary moment, which is feeling very intimate at this moment. There's a lot of intimate, sad music out there, very emotional. I think if I can say, like, people are very emotionally wrought at this moment in time, and that feels very appropriate. Not only that, but it's a bridge between genres. The question of, oh, what does your band sound like, is sort of, it's simple for some people, but not for us. It's really emotionally laden music. It's imbued with like a lot of the human stuff, which is to say really varied, really disparate, really contrasting sometimes. And I mean, the short answer is like, yeah, it bridges R&B, pop, ambient, experimental, jazz. But like, that's too many things. People don't get that, you know? You can't say all that stuff. And I end up saying something like, well, do you like the Blue Nile? You know? And people go, yeah, I love that band, you know? But all that to say, it's about a combination. It's not about doing one thing. It's about doing all the things you want to do. And like I was saying before, a great band to me is just a container for all of those things.
It's funny. I have a friend, his band is acoustic driven, right? And they play fast, and it's technically old time music, which is, you know, there are no solos, but it's very fast and driving. And they have horns, and people go, oh, that's his bluegrass band. And he's like, there's no horns in bluegrass. So,
yeah.
And so after a while, when people would say, well, what kind of music do you guys play? He would just say, party music.
I like that. Yeah. I like being, that's pretty artistic of an answer. Like, you be, you know, be as lyrical as you can, be abstract, but also descriptive.
Yeah. And it's like, who's going to argue? Who's going to say, I don't like party music, you know?
Yeah, right.
But I just want to ask you one more question about the art. Now, I'm not going to claim to be an expert. Sure. I took a glimpse, and it seems to me that your artwork is also informed by humor. That I sense that there's like.
Totally.
Yeah. And that's something that Absolutely. Some people are afraid of in visual art sometimes, right?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think so. I would like to believe that informal or casual or fun in art is inviting. A lot of art kind of stands on these stilts of formality or seriousness or some sort of crucial emotion that if you don't quote like get it, then you're wasting your time, you know. I think fun in art is actually very necessary. It's a lot more human, and yeah, what the hell, like more laughter in the gallery, please. I don't know, I think like it's definitely one of those mediums or like or worlds that is very capable of taking itself too seriously. And although the work has like it's definitely its foundation is in skill and refinement, it's sort of counterintuitive to the material. And like I was saying before, like that's what I'm trying to push is sort of visible contradiction, which, you know, it's visual art. It should talk really loudly just in the way it looks. And that is one thing that I'm really trying to push is this sort of like, huh? Like, what is that? You know, like if the materiality of something is in question, then that's interesting. That makes people lean in. I think that's also a metaphor that can be applied to music for sure. You know, if there's a question mark in the air, then you're going to have people leaning in, or like you're going to have people bending their ear. And I've never thought of art as easy, or like it shouldn't be easy. It really should challenge you. Once you're challenged by something you're looking at or something you're listening to, you can warm up to it in this way that it becomes yours. You're the interpreter. And in as far as the visual art goes, it's all figuration. It's all people. So the viewer is a person. So no matter what I say, no matter what I do, there is projection happening. Just like, exactly like music, every single person that listens is projecting themselves into the work. Chase from the band said something to me recently that just kind of like blew my mind. I'm like, how have I never heard this before? He said that we were talking about playing shows and whether or not it matters if you had a good set, whether or not it matters if you had a good time playing, or if something went wrong, if something went right. None of that matters. The only thing that matters is how you make them feel. And if people, you know, people bring themselves to the concert, the crowd is a part of it, a part of the experience. I think that's a big, big aspect of this band in particular that I've learned, is that when making emotional music, oof, man, the people are so crucial as a part of that equation. Someone might have just gotten dumped before they showed up to the show, and they're in tears at the show. And I'm like, oh God, like it's something's working, you know?
Well, but and that ties back to the musical element, because I think sometimes people miss, like, you can have music that is sincere and beautiful and quiet and engaging, but it too can have humor to it. Like that's sometimes some of my favorite music, where it's like you have a very sincere piano setting and the lyrics, they might be heartbreaking, but there is that little bit of like, oh God, only somebody who's been dumped in that manner could find that amusing, you know?
Yes, totally. Like a dark comedy, if you will. I think Leonard Cohen is a master at this.
Yeah.
It's like beyond tongue in cheek. It's like the more you pay attention, the more you pick up on his perspective on life and how dark that is, you know, how doomed it is. I think it's the artist's job to make light of something dark, right? Is to add levity to something that could be weighing everyone down. The human experience is pretty damn heavy. I think a lot of art is kind of just lifting it off your shoulders for a moment.
What you said about performance, about, you know, did you have a good show, bad show? And then I guess the sure. other thing with that too is that, and thinking about, you know, what the audience is bringing, it's like you know, and I'm sure this has happened to you, you might think it's the worst thing ever. You're like, oh my God, my timing was off, blah, blah, blah. And then somebody comes up to you and they're like, thank you for playing that song.
Yeah.
They had no knowledge of the things that were going wrong. They were just lost in the experience.
Oh, totally. And it doesn't matter. I mean, especially like as a performer, no one knows unless you make it apparent. No one's going to know that you screwed up unless you go, hang on, stop. Let's restart that. And then everyone goes, huh, you know. But beyond that, it doesn't matter. And part of the live experience, I think, is a little more weird. It's a little imperfect. People look to recorded music as striving for perfection, or it's like, it's historically thought of as like the artistic mind. It's like the perfect vision of the artist, right? Live is completely different. It could resemble the record. You'll see some bands just kind of like throw the record to the wind and be like, let's do something else, You'll see some bands never play some of the songs on record, which is crazy. I'm proud to say that we are now playing every song that's on that record, which is like a big deal for us personally. Took us a while to get there, but we can now play for an hour and a half, which is pretty awesome. And we're now playing the entire record in full. We just this past summer we played in Newport, which is where Chase Segley is from. He born and raised. And we played for 2 hours, and that was an intimidating task at first, but we were like, you know what? Let's just play the whole damn record and then play some cover songs that we really love.
I'll close out on this, a superficial question. You
Sure.
seem to favor the letter P for these projects.
I don't know. I don't know. I'm just trying to fill out the P section in the record store, I will say that my favorite kind of band name is banal, is a ubiquitous, like really banal term. I think it's like the perfect way to kind of catch the whole picture. Yeah, I don't know. I guess you only have one good idea, right? I don't know. You can only have so many good ideas. But Pets came together very quickly once we had finished the music, and we were like shocked that it's not a band, that it's not some famous band from the 60s.
Everybody I know, they always say, for the name, we just punted. It doesn't mean anything. It's just
Yeah.
there.
No, it's good. It's good. It should mean something and nothing. A perfect band name is like just something that's easy to say. But I have a lot of people come up to me with like ideas of what it means. It's really interesting to me. Especially Brian Wilson just passed, and since then everyone's like, ah, Pet Sounds, Pet Sounds. And I'm like, not, you're not wrong. Like someone came up to me at a show recently and was like, are we the pets? Are we the, is that what you mean? And I was like, yes. Not no, never no. Always yes. You're right.
You've been listening to a conversation with Johnny Campolo of Pets. The band's first album, Spiral Question Mark, is out now. You can learn more about the group via their official website, petsportal.net. You can learn about Johnny Campolo's visual artworks at jcampolo.com. You can learn more about this podcast and all programming on our station by visiting our website, kmuw.org. Send us your questions and comments at info@kmuw.org and find all the latest programming notes on that website as well. As always, this is an excellent time to remind you that our theme music is composed and performed by Torrin Anderson. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.